I want to welcome back Collins to 93.7 Voice of the Shoe Shop. Right now we're talking about economics and colonialism here with Collins, and talking about how we can kind of revise the status of Africa, given the fact that it's still trying to get over colonization and neocolonialism and trying to stand on its own two feet. So we're looking at some other ideas about how to affect progress and reduce global aid at the same time. So one thing we are going to talk about today is the African-Western disconnect. Westerners think about Africa, or what they have, what they believe is going on in Africa, and what Africans think is going on in the West. And I think I'll start off with some ideas from Collins as to what some of those preconceived ideas are, and how we remedy those, and see if we can answer some of those questions while we're on the radio.
Yes, Catherine. We need to continue to appreciate that the disconnect between Africa and the West borrows its root from the colonial era. And we need to appreciate that this disconnect has led to a few much stereotypes and generalizations of Africa and African concerns. The media has been used as a vehicle for peddling this stereotype. And I think time is right for us to correct and to outlive these wrongs, so that Africa should be understood in its own right, should be understood in its own operation, and in terms of and appreciate our culture and way of doing things. I think it will be unfair to assess or judge Africa based on the standards of the West. We appreciate that the civilization of the West has some meaningful gains that Africa could borrow from, but the West also need to borrow from African civilization. We think we need to come with a relationship that is mutually tied, not on the basis of competition or status rating, but on appreciation of diversity within each culture. And this should be social and economic. We need to appreciate that Africa for a long time relied on barter trade and the principle of redistribution and reciprocity. These are things that have been torn by the advent of tearing down these principles of our being. We have also been socially disconnected at the family level, at the community or society level, and even at the continental level. In my view, I propose that African leaders should be advocates of bargaining the place for Africa. We need to re-regulate our media and what external media covers about Africa. I think that those media houses that propagate these stereotypes about Africa should be denied the right to operate within Africa, because they need to respect us. They need to speak of us in the way that represents the truth about us. We have challenges, yes, but we cannot use the weak points to generalize what Africa is all about. Yes.
Okay. I'm just kind of wondering, everything you're saying is certainly wise. I think some of the disconnect occurs by people who have been educated overseas, have traveled extensively. They know what's going on in the world, and, you know, they're making decisions based on maybe out of narcissism or selfishness when we talk about poor governance here. And, of course, overseas, you know, I guess it's kind of the same idea when we talk about looting Africa and, you know, having control. But I think, again, you know, when we were talking the other day about changing attitudes, sometimes I wonder, you know, changing our own government's minds in the West comes from the public. It comes from the voters, the taxpaying citizens. And the same thing happens here. What can we tell the general public, you know, back home and here? How do we tell them that things need to change? And if we can get them to change, can they put pressure on their governments to start, knocking on doors of governments with poor governance to change ways of corruption and justice and rule of law? Because right now when we talk about propaganda and whatnot, especially in the West, and you're right about media, I mean, that's all we see about Africans is poor, pitiful people in need of our help all the time. If we could change that, I wonder what would actually happen.
Catherine, look at it this way. Probably we need to begin looking at this at the cause-effect analysis. One is the United Nations. We have the World Trade Organization. We have the IMF. We have the World Bank. And you remember all these institutions came into place before many African countries got their independence. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, many African countries subscribed to these organizations without understanding what they stood for and what it held for them by being members of the same. Mm-hmm. So we signed ourselves into prisons. We signed ourselves into another form of slavery, away from the traditional slave dealing that we were in, or oppression of colonialism. I think that going forward, African governments owe to their citizens, one, to renegotiate their position in these many multilateral treaties that we sign into. We need to renegotiate, we need to review and see what relations they hold for us. Look at it in terms of production. For instance, Kenya, Uganda, and Ethiopia are some of the best producers of tea. Our tea, we produce it in our farms, where we work as laborers, but this tea is processed in Europe and brought back to be sold to us. In Europe, they take the first grade and the second grade, but the third grade is shipped back to Africa for our consumption. I think that's unfair, because how could then will we say that Africa is poor when we are the producers? It doesn't make sense. You look, there's a lot of oil in Africa, but all this oil is processed, refined and processed by multilateral companies like Shell, Oil Libya. And these are not African corporations. Even in the beverage industry, we have, for example, Kenya Breweries. But who are the owners of Kenya Brewery? Diageo of Britain. All the component of these beverages are processed and grown in Kenya. This is what should happen first. In terms of quality rating, Africa must design instruments that rate their own products for external market. Africans must come with stringent rules that define at what point do products of Africa exit the continent. And they must not exit at the raw material stage. Let them exit as processed items. It is unfair to have Europe or the US telling us the kind of quality they want of our items. If it is poor quality if we process it, why then does it become superior quality if it is processed in Europe? And we know where value is. Value is in the processing. So these are things, simple things that need to change. And African farmers, African producers must come together, must be enlightened, and hold their governments accountable. We cannot farm and process out.
You know, the one thing I'm thinking of, and I think I was trying to state prior to, is not... You know, things have to change here, but I think things need to change in the West. And, you know, like, again, governments govern. They do what they need to do to extract money and resources from a particular country to feed their own people. But the people that live in those particular countries, you know, are living day to day, you know, going to work, paying the bills, looking after their families. And if you were to ask a good lot of the population, they have no idea who the IMF is. They have no idea what the World Bank does. They have no idea the kind of policies in effect that are put through by the World Trade Organizations and the policies put in effect with developing countries in regards to ulterior motives, whatever the case may be, for debt reduction. The millions of people that, you know, work day to day and struggle day to day have no idea about these things, and yet they are people that, if we're, as you say, enlightened, could also change that fact with their own governments, right? And I'm thinking, if you know, it's kind of the two sides of the coin. If if we can start educating the people in the West.
Let me cut you short. There's a miracle that is going to liberate us. The miracle of globalization and the miracle of technology. Yesterday, you had the opportunity to see people who are doing crafts work with their own hands, processing hyacinth from the lake to finished products. The challenge they have so far is in marketing. It has to pass through middlemen for the product to reach the global market. At the end result, the middlemen benefit, but they remain poorer. Look at this miracle. How about if we bring technology closer to these people down here? Because the government will take too long, and the West will be hard to change its ways. But globalization is beyond governments and is going to be beyond individuals. The gift of the technology of internet is marvelous. How can these peasant producers have their items in the global market bypassing this middleman? That will help them. And that will be a game changer in this thing. How do we educate this craftsman down here to be able to sell his products via net? We will have beaten them in their own technology. In their own game, we will have beaten them. And I think you saw their work. They were very nice. Mm-hmm. But they tell you, for our work to reach Europe, it has to pass about 4 or 3 middlemen. And value is lost along the way. Yep. So that is one way. So what we are saying is that, because many of these innovative Africans, one, are poor, some are illiterate in terms of formal education. So then they need somebody to hold their hand, to show them this miracle, to expose their expertise and their specialties and diversity to that other market. It is going to work. Mm-hmm. It is going to work.
Oh, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that is the formula. And, you know, the other thing that I also think, too, and is that when we can create these changes at this level, and especially with the next generation coming up, we can look at the fact that the next generation is going to be more educated.
That's
They're
right.
going to be employable. Mm. And they are going to be the next set of politicians that will start ruling
yes.
these countries.
Mm. We're talking of education and a freer business platform for them to operate in.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm saying, too, it has something to do with integrity, right?
Yes.
We've talked about corruption and how it is so rampant in Kenya and Africa and the rest of the developing world that, you know, I think once problems start getting sorted out from the bottom up, that a lot of these things will start going by the wayside.
Yeah.
And, you know, quite frankly, Collins, for people like yourself, when I hear you talk and you're so passionate, and knowing a bit about your history now and where you've come from, and if you recall, when we did first the part one of this interview, one of the fellas from the center that we were doing the interview
yes.
came up and shook your hand. Mm-hmm. And I think it's people like you that are the leaders of tomorrow, you know, and I think for people in the West to realize that we have the caliber of people here in Kenya that can make these changes, I think that's phenomenal, and I
yes.
think this is something they need to know.
Yes, and Catherine, I told you yesterday that some of the people who have led us to the problems we have today are politicians, because politicians are middlemen in the game of corruption and in the game of global funding. So then, which is the other way? There must always be an alternative. And the alternative is here. One, African innovators must learn to patent their works. They must learn to protect their work.
Mm-hmm. So there has to be rule of law.
Exactly.
And they have to be educated in what
they
that
have
rule,
to be educated.
Rule of law is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, for a long time in Kenya, people did not know about music copywriting. And individuals, young people in the slums who did their music, had their music pirated and stolen by informed artists.
Yep.
But today the issue of copywriting has been so advocated that young people grow up in this talent industry knowing that they can protect their work.
Yep.
We need to do this also to crafts. In Kenya, for instance, the kiondo is a traditional basket of the Agikuyo and Swahili. But you see, it is patented in the global market to be belonging to the British. How did this come about? Because our traders were innocently selling their goods without knowing that the global market operates on the principle of ownership through right ownership. So we need to bring this even to peasants. That is it possible that you patent your work against piracy and against thieving? And I think this is the kind of information we need. Again, what we are lacking also is, we are weak at rather, is mentorship. In the Kenyan education system, there's something called the Science Congress, for instance. In Science Congress, you have young people who have innovation in sciences come and display their works, innovative works. And at the middle-level college level, middle-level colleges, there's also the projects done by craftsmen. And they must be original and innovative, creative works. Where do these disappear? When you come back to life, they disappear because, one, these young people probably do not know source of funding to enhance their work because they come from very poor families. Two, they do not know the plan. You know, they're not mentored into how to display, to take this thing forward. Again, we have believed so much in academic education and papers to the extent that we worship it at the expense of other talents and passion, things that people can do. And I think going by the presentation I saw Muhuri do, Muhuri Innovation Center do, I think it captures what Africans and Kenyans need for this time. We need mentorship, we need a commitment and passion in our work, and we also need microfinancing to take these things to the next level. I think that is the game changer.
Okay, Collins, you know what? We're going to have to probably wrap it up here. I think we're going on to 2 hours. And I'm going to ask to do one thing for me, and that is to deliver a message to your fellow Africans, to your fellow Kenyans, and to your community members about, you know, what the future holds, what you'd like to see happen in regards to business, in regards to attitudes, regarding the West. Anyway, do you want to comment on any of that?
Yes. First, we need to appreciate that the West holds a very significant place in the development of Africa. However, the people who know about Africa in the West corrupt that information. But there are people in the West who really want to know the truth about Africa. We need to begin by identifying that Africa is a continent. It is not a country and it is not a village. Africa is a continent made up of almost 50 countries. And these countries are independent in their own ways and they are unique in their own ways. The other thing is Africa is the home to talent. You look at the British Premier League, for instance. Up to 30% of players at that professional level are Africans. Africans are equally talented. And even in innovation, we have seen a lot of innovation coming from Africa. The mobile money transfer system is credited to Kenya, the M-Pesa. That is a creation of Kenya. And that should tell you the place. And you go to, I hear there is it called PAL or what in the U.S. that it is used also uses the same mobile technology?
Yeah, and maybe just explain M-Pesa. I mean, I talk about it when I'm back home. Hmm. It is similar to internet banking, but it goes further.
Yes, M-Pesa is a mobile money banking and transfer system. It allows you to deposit and withdraw money via your mobile. So you can also do savings and take credit through that system just by the use of your mobile phone. You do not have to do any paperwork and you do not have to be at a particular place. You can transact in M-Pesa in wherever the Safaricom coverage. Safaricom is our mobile service provider. It's very big. Eh? So wherever it is, you can access. So it makes it possible for people in the rural of Africa,
perfect,
in the very interior, to get money, to transact, to do business at a very cost-effective and on stable network. And I think the West is borrowing this from us. It will not borrow such a technology if Africa was a dark place, without creativity. This is our own making, and we are very proud about it.
Do you remember the one comment on there about in regards to the 15 myths that the West has about Africa?
Yeah,
one was about that Africa does not produce art. And I'm kind of changing the subject here because I was actually just in at a gallery today, and I have seen some incredible paintings. And matter of fact, maybe when I come back in the fall, I may have to invest. I'm not too sure if you're up on art or not, but wow. And it's very symbolic of Africa, but with an African twist. And, you know, when you talk about abstract paintings and metal sculpture work, I've seen so much of it here that it would certainly give any artist a run for their money. So amazing things are coming out of this place. Amazing.
Yes, indeed, in terms of performing in creative arts, I do not know if there is somewhere that compares to Africa. Because art has been a way of life for Africans from long, long before. If you go to just about 30 kilometers from here, is a place called Kisii. And Kisii is the home of sculptures. People come from the West, from Europe, just to come and buy sculptured work. If you go to the coast, you look at the kind of paintings, the beadwork that we are doing, and they are so amazing. They are so amazing. And also remember, Africa and Kenya is the ancestral home for the former president of the United States, Barack Obama. You could hate him, you could love him, but he has positives that has changed the world. He could not be perfect as a human, but he tells you what Africa can do. And you remember Ben Carson, one of the leading neurosurgeons in the whole world, formerly of John Hopkins in the U.S., just said that he could trace his roots to a tribe called Turkana in northern Kenya. So that tells you what Africa exports to that area. Yeah. We also want the West to reciprocate, to export such kind of people to Africa, not people who come here to blackmail us with global aid, but people who come to stay and to belong in Africa, to feel at home and do positive things that change humanity, regardless of our colors.
Collins, maybe do you want to send a message to your fellow Africans?
Of course. To my fellow Africans, we are very happy. We are proud. We God blessed us with a rich and dark skin so that we can survive the heat of the tropics, and it's very beautiful. I want to encourage you to believe in yourself. I want to encourage you to have a drive, and I want to encourage you to have attitudes and values that distinguish you not just as Africans, but as human beings, because we hold this to be true, that we are all created equal, and that's very important.
Well, thanks, Collins. I think that wraps it up for us today, and I want to thank everybody for listening. We'll see you next week. I want to thank our listeners who have tuned in to Voice of the Shoe Shop for this four-part series and for an up-close look at just a few of the dynamics going on in Kenya today. You can email us by writing to globalsouth@voiceoftheshoeshop.ca. Global South is one word, at voiceoftheshoeshop, one word, .ca. I would love to hear from you. Bye for now.